Weather Service. This Thursday, May 18th, partly sunny and warm, a high of 71 inland, cooler near Lake Michigan. Right now, 53 in Kenosha, 51 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Before we get started with today's program, I want to give you a program note about tomorrow's morning show. Tomorrow I was supposed to be interviewing Dave McGrath, WGTD's own news director, about his first novel. But then I realized that there was something more timely that really needs to air tomorrow. So we're postponing my interview with Dave McGrath until a week from tomorrow. Tomorrow, instead, out of the archives, I'm going to be replaying a conversation that I recorded many, many years ago, more than 20 years ago, with Greg Borowski, who at the time was a sports writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we talked about his book, First and Long, which tells the really fascinating story of the first season that Shorewood High School and Messmer High School combined forces, their football teams, because otherwise neither school could manage to field a football team. But if they combined their forces, they could field a football team. So Shorewood and Messmer came together. Messwood is what it was kind of affectionately known as, and that first season was in fact a bit of a mess. It was a winless season for that football team, and there were lots and lots of struggles both on and off the field with students that came from widely divergent backgrounds, and somehow it proved to be a memorable and even inspiring story that Greg Borowski tells in his wonderful book, First and Long. I want to rebroadcast that tomorrow because Saturday afternoon, actually Saturday evening at 6:30, the culmination of a day-long cinema experience at Parkside will culminate in a new full-length documentary film, which is called Messwood, which actually looks at the combined football teams of Messmer and Shorewood today, many, many years after that difficult first season. So in honor of the screening of that film, which again is Saturday evening, 6:30 at Parkside, I'm going to rebroadcast my interview with Greg Borowski, author of First and Long, tomorrow. And again, for those of you looking forward to hearing from Dave McGrath, that'll happen a week from tomorrow. Today, I am excited to be speaking with two colleagues from Carthage College, although very much on the other side of the tracks, two guys who are involved in the athletic wing of Carthage College. First of all, a guest who we've had before, and I'm so happy to welcome back Seth Weidman, who is assistant athletic director at Carthage and the head men's swimming and diving coach as well. And also joining us for the first time, because he's brand new to Carthage, is Ryan Kane, who is the athletic director at Carthage. And we're going to be talking with both of these gentlemen kind of in general about the place of athletics in higher education at a place like Carthage. We'll touch on a few really gratifying success stories at Carthage. And we'll also spend a few minutes at the end of the hour talking specifically with Seth about Water Safety Month, which is the month of May. And of course, with a drowning that occurred not too far from Carthage not too long ago, it's a very, very timely topic for us to remember how to be safe in the water as the summer months approach. So, Seth Weidman and Ryan Kane, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Great to be here.
Thank you, Greg. Yep.
Glad we can have this conversation. So, Seth, it was you who actually suggested bringing on Ryan Kane. Before we meet him, tell us a little bit about what it felt like to be welcoming a new athletic director to the campus.
Yeah, it's it's exciting in many ways. There was some, obviously we've talked about it before, I think a little bit when I've been on that. There are times when you have some turnover in leadership, at the top in higher ed, and we've been no different at Carthage in our athletic department over the past few years. All of those reasons for people to move on in that turnover, they all make sense, right? There was good reasons for all of it. But at the same time, when you're kind of dealing with a little bit of that and with some, interim roles that people were taking on over the past few years, sometimes there's a little bit of uneasiness, right? Just to be completely frank and honest. And, going through that search process again late last year, I think there were some nerves involved in the staff is going through that process. I would say that those fears or those nerves were quickly dealt with when we had three just really dynamite candidates and one especially dynamite candidate right here to my right that really got people energized and excited right from the search process forward. And that does, I feel lucky to be able to say that. That doesn't always happen when you go through a search process, right?
Sure.
And so the fact that that was able to happen, and then, as Ryan has been able to start the past, under 2 months that he's been here so far, already there's sort of a new energy in some ways, and a re-energizing and a refocus. And that's obviously going to be a something that Ryan could talk about and something that's going to be a process, but we all feel like that process has already started. And so in that way, it's just been it's kind of a fun time right now.
Absolutely. So how long has that role been specifically vacant, and how long was the search process?
Yeah. So Nate Stewart, he took a role outside of college athletics last December. And so, that was about five plus months now. And at the time, John Swallow and David Timmerman and others, leadership at Carthage, decided to start a search immediately. And so that search kicked off pretty quickly. But always knowing that there could be some gap time in between then. And so Kelsey Stoltz took over as interim right around the new year. And that led right up until April 1st, I believe, was Ryan's first day on campus. And we always knew once the right hire was made and it was Ryan, we always knew that there were some things that he was going to be wrapping up at his previous institution, and that April 1st would be the date that he would start. So, it was about 3 months of a true interim role there in between the two full-time athletic directors.
Well, it's great to have the void filled here and with someone so dynamic. So Ryan Kane, we welcome you to the morning show for just the first of what I'm sure will be a number of visits.
Oh, I sure hope so.
Yeah. So let's first of all find out a little bit about you, kind of biographically speaking, where you come from originally, sort of your background, and particularly your athletic background, and maybe just that winding road.
Well, we'll leave out the accomplishments piece. I mean, I was a participant, but had a great experience. And I think you don't get into athletics if you don't have a rewarding experience yourself. I mean, I got into coaching primarily out of the idea that, you know, I was impacted so positively by other coaches. I think that's why Seth and others like us that are in coaching, you get into it because of, you know, what someone had given to you at some point. You feel like you want to do that as well. And so, yeah, born and raised in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, huge Packer fan and cheesehead through and through, and have some roots up in the UP from my mother's side and, you know, blue-collar family. My father was farmers and things like that. So, you know, I stayed close to home, and, you know, my path is a little unique. I went to a private liberal arts college, St. Norbert College in De Pere, Wisconsin, and from there, you know, I was a first generation. So, you know, no one in my family had, you know, all blue collar. No one had really ever gone on to college. So playing a sport, going to college was all kind of new to me. Had no idea what I wanted to do for a living.
Did you go to college, in a sense, because of sports?
Oh,
was
it
mostly to
100%.
Keep playing sports? So.
Yeah. I just wanted to put a leather ball and an iron hoop on Friday nights in high school. you know, I used to chase around a little white ball as well, playing golf, and enjoyed all of it. I played all the sports growing up, and certainly for me, college was just simply that. Just where could I go play ball? And, you know, ended up being there.
I'm guessing you weren't the center on your basketball team?
No, you know, I wasn't. I, you know, they call them shooting guards, and I lived by that shooting part of it. Yeah, whenever I, you know, it wasn't a shot I didn't like. If I had it, I'd get it up. So it was a good time.
Cool. So tell us a little bit about this shift over to coaching. I mean, obviously, it makes sense, but on the other hand, just because you're a great player doesn't make you a great coach.
100%. Yeah, that's a very accurate statement. You know, I when I graduated from college, I didn't really think or know that I wanted to be a coach. At the time, my college coach coached me in both golf and basketball. So I used to joke, you know, like, this is a pretty easy gig. I'd like to do this for a living. Like, I don't even know how do you even do this, right? It wasn't until after I had moved to Chicago, I was working in the private sector, you know, just doing a couple different odd jobs, you know, I guess trying to find my way more than anything, right? Small town kid from Green Bay, stayed there basically for college, knew I wanted to get out of there, enjoyed the idea of the bright lights of the big city. So moved with a few friends to Chicago, was doing that. And I just remember calling a few people and being like, you know, how do you get into coaching? You know, because I genuinely think that that's something that I wanted to get into. I dabbled with it a little bit, just coaching some high school stuff here and there when I was in college. And I knew it was something that I'd like to do. And at that point, it was like, well, do you go back to school and you become a teacher and coach at the high school level? So I kind of, you know, started looking into that and really kind of felt like after some conversations that, you know, maybe college coaching was the right move. And to do it, everybody said, you know, you got to go back, you know, get your degree and try to go it that way. And so...
That's right. Your first degree was in communications.
You were saying. That's right. Yep. Communications undergraduate degree. And then, you know, I started dabbling at a small college in River Forest, Illinois called Dominican University.
Yeah.
And I kind of helped out there. I did whatever I could in the athletic department. I helped out the men's basketball program. And then all of a sudden I just, you know, at the time I was working for a company, I walked into my president's office and said, you know what? I'm going to do this. You know, I quit my job. I put myself through graduate school. I went to Valparaiso University down there in Northwest Indiana, and all with the hopes that I could be a small college basketball coach somewhere in the Midwest.
Wow.
And that took me to a couple other stops along the way. And, you know, while I did that, you know, leadership was always something I was very into. You know, I studied it. I did a minor in it. I did a lot of it in my graduate school work. And so I would consume a lot of it, and I always felt like that role of being an administrator and being a department leader, as far as that's concerned, was something that I would gravitate towards when my coaching career kind of felt like it was coming to an end. I didn't know when that would be. At Ripon, where I was prior to this, Ripon College, you know, the opportunity presented itself while I was the men's basketball coach there, somewhat, you know, kind of tragically, in the sense that our previous athletic director lost a battle to cancer, and they decided that they wanted to fill that position with someone internally. And I thought, well, who better than me, right? So I threw my name in. They hired me. I did both roles for about 4 years, and really started to enjoy that administrative part of it as well. You know, coaching basketball for 20 years, I thought, you know, maybe now is the right time. I got a young family. I thought maybe this is the right opportunity now, when Carthage's opportunity came open, to dive full into that administrative role. So
interesting.
Yeah.
It surprises me in some ways that it was such a smooth transition, just because I don't, and I think most of us wouldn't think of those two as being all that closely related. I mean, obviously it's all about sports,
yeah.
but the stuff you have to do as athletic director, I should think, is pretty different from what you do day in and day out as
a
coach.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And, I think by going through it, I can empathize with the coaches quickly on, the struggles that they go through. I can relate to the euphoria that they feel as well. Mm. I often joke that, there's nothing like coaching. Like the highs are so extremely high and the lows are so extremely low. When you're talking about an outcome driven industry like that.
Right.
And it goes all the way into the recruiting aspect of it too. You feel such euphoria when you get that really star recruit that you think is going to really change your program. Or when you lose that recruit to a competitor and you got to see that person in the pool or on the field or on the court. So having gone through those emotions before, it's all tied to it. I joke that, and I made a comment to our staff, I didn't get into administration because I love administration. I just love being around coaches and I love being around competition and I get the juice from that. And, you want to find something when your feet hit the floor, you can't wait to go to work in the morning. My guess is, for you, that's this, and that's the stability that you've shown this radio station by doing that. So,
right. So you, so I think you just hit the nail on the head there with the fact that you love coaches and interacting with coaches, and I think that also underscores that's probably the biggest part of your job is that I think you said it before we went on the air, you're kind of a coach of the coaches.
Yeah, I really do look at myself as that. Like, I'm not here to tell them how to do their job. Seth knows how to make these kids swim fast in the pool. I certainly don't. But, there's such a human element to, being a coach and, motivating kids and mentoring them and all that. And I've always really enjoyed that. I just love being around. At the end of the day, we're here to serve the student athletes, and that 18 to 22 year old window is such a formative years in your life that to play a small role in that, when you're a coach, you play a much larger role, but as an administrator, you want them to have a great experience. Right. And so that's what drives me every day. Mm-hmm. I love it.
So I assume Ripon is a similar sort of school to Carthage in terms of athletics and the way athletics. So it's a division. Was a Division III.
Private liberal arts, NCAA Division III affiliate. So yeah, non-scholarship, same type of environment, just a little bit smaller in scope. 18 sports compared to 28 sports at Carthage. So a few more student athletes, but yeah, it's very similar.
Wow. So Seth, from your position as someone who is, you're assistant athletic director, we should remind people, but also as someone who is primarily one of the coaches at Carthage, what does this relationship mean to you? Whether it's Ryan or Nate before him or whoever before Nate, what does that relationship mean for you and for your colleagues?
There's always an element of that, coach of the coaches, certainly. that's always been a part of it, no matter who's been here. And I've had the opportunity and the fortune, I think, to have, a few different people have that role, right? I was, hired by Dr. Bob Bond, who I think 27 years was his tenure at Carthage, and feel fortunate enough to have been hired by him, and then had, a couple of other leaders of the department. But I think one thing that Carthage has gotten right over the years, not that you can't be a great administrator or athletic director without having that coaching background, but I think that we've shown over the years that the best ones often do have that coaching background. All of those who I just named and talked about had that coaching background beforehand. I think the difference with Ryan is that he's coming straight from doing those dual roles, right? Coming straight from having, he just wrapped up a basketball season this past spring, right? And I really think that along with his other qualities, it brings a certain sort of connection immediately to what we're doing as coaches. And I think that role of coaching the coaches can and supporting the coaches in the ways that we need is kind of right there right from the start. So I think that relationship is strong, and part of that is trying to figure out how to support us enough to give the student athletes the great experience that they want and that we want them to have while they're at Carthage.
Fantastic. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today on The Morning Show with Carthage's new athletic director, Ryan Kane, and Seth Weidman, assistant athletic director, is with us as well. Gentlemen, we should talk about some of the great successes that have been enjoyed in Carthage athletics over the past few months. And one of them that we should make sure we don't run out of time to talk about is this spectacular track and field athlete by the name of Joseph White, who is about to make yet another appearance at Nationals this coming weekend. That has to be gratifying to see success at that kind of level.
Yeah, no question. You know, I think it's really gratifying when you talk about, you know, local radio station and a local kid, right, from just down the road, who, you know, oftentimes kids at that age, 17, 18, they can be kind of misguided or thought that, you know, their talent should go somewhere else if they're better than that. And ultimately, Joseph chose Carthage for all the right reasons. You know, he wanted to be a nursing student and stay close to home, and he's throwing things, shot put, javelin, you know, or discus, a hammer throw, all those objects. He's thrown as far as anybody in the country, and you could do his numbers. You know, when you deal with a sport like track and field or swimming and diving, like, you know, the stopwatch and the tape measure, they don't lie. And they could be throwing those numbers at Carthage or at the University of Wisconsin or University of Kentucky. And so, you know, his numbers match up with some of the best in the country, regardless of where you go to school. And so, you know, that just speaks to, you know, just make it big wherever you are, right? And try to become comfortable. I think, you know, I think that's the number one thing most kids are looking for in their college decision is, you know, they want to feel comfortable. And I think Joseph certainly felt that. And it often leads to great success, too. You know, if you feel comfort in your sport, you know, you typically perform well. So right. I think he's in a good spot, and we're excited to see what he can do at Nationals outdoor now.
Absolutely. Well, it was great to have him on the morning show, Seth. I was so glad you came up with that idea. And particularly depending on how Nationals go, maybe a return visit will be in order. So that
absolutely. That, I mean, the one thing that helps with him is that, as Ryan said, he's local, right? So even over the summer, you know, we could connect if that's something that works for him.
Very good. I know that one team that did well this year, but it probably nevertheless felt a little bit disappointing, was men's volleyball, given two consecutive national championships. It's funny how a season of 18-8, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole lot of programs that would just, you know, give anything for that kind of success. But for Carthage, that felt like, I'm sure, kind of a step down from 2 years of incredible glory. So what does that mean for a team that's enjoyed great success and then something that isn't quite up to that same level? And what's your responsibility, Ryan Kane, as athletic director in terms of a moment like that?
Well, I think that moment is a quick reminder of just, you know, how fragile sports is, you know, how fine the line is between championship and you know, second place. I mean, we were reminded of it quite recently here locally, right? You know, our Milwaukee Bucks, you know, Giannis had that great press conference after their loss talking about, was this considered a failure by them not advancing? And it's a polarizing topic, right? And I would say that, you know, there's so much that goes into when you look back and you peel back the onion on a championship team. Like, you know, those championship teams he had previously they had great leadership, they were healthy. You know, this team this year had, you know, some things, right? They had some struggles with some of their best players having some injuries and trying to get that chemistry going. And that's challenging. Yet, you know, when they were good and they were healthy, they were the only team in the country to beat the number one team in the country all year long. So, you know, it just shows you how fine that line was if they could have gotten there. You know, I think we see it all the time in sports where, you know, there is that underdog or that person that it's just the right time where it clicks and here they are. I mean, in the NBA right now, obviously the Heat beat out the Bucks, and here they are. They've already won another game on the road in the Eastern Conference Finals. And so it just shows that, you know, there's such a fine line there. But yeah, my responsibility is simply to just try to do the best I can to help support the volleyball program to find the right pieces to build it, to get it back to where it was. But again, there's probably not a lot there. You know, it's just a few things here and there that need to fall your way.
Right. Absolutely. You were saying, Ryan, you know, talking about Seth and the swimming team, that, you know, you're not about to tell Seth how to coach his swimmers into swimming faster. I mean, you don't know the first thing about that.
Right.
How about when it comes to your own sport like basketball? Although I guess you came to Carthage pretty much after the basketball season was over, because you coached Ripon's season to its conclusion.
That's right, so, I did, yep.
So, and at Ripon, you were the basketball coach. So,
yeah.
So do you foresee any potential, not exactly conflict of interest, but what's it going to be like for you?
Well,
to...
I can be far less tactful with the officials now, can't I? I mean, it doesn't carry with it a potential technical or anything. I can just yell from the stands whatever I want, right? So I'll be less tactful with the officials. I can't wait to tell our men's women's basketball coaches what they're doing wrong, of course, right? I mean, it's the best part of being the armchair quarterback. So, no, you know, I think every sport's got, you know, they're all created equal. You're all trying to get a ball in the hoop inside that space. But, like, at the end of the day, like, everybody does it a little differently. And you know what? There's no one way to do it. So I'm here just to enjoy it and support however I can. If they want to pick my brain, I'm happy to share. But oftentimes, you know, unless you're in that gym every day for 2 hours a day with the kids, you often don't know exactly what it is the team needs, right? So
right.
You got to put your trust in the expertise of the people coaching them.
Sure. Well, and of course the men's team at Carthage had a great season with 18-9, and
absolutely.
So that was terrific. The women struggled a bit more, but
and the men have everybody coming back. So you know, if you haven't been out to a game, it's great. We've got a couple of local guys on the team, and you know, I think they're going to have a great year next year. They brought in a couple game changing recruits as well, so it should be an exciting year for them.
Very good. What about wrestling, which is a newcomer to the landscape at Carthage? And I forget, was this the second year?
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Second year, and what we decided to do is actually separate the genders. So we have got a coach coaching both genders now. So Coach Giros is coaching the men's side, and Coach Calhoun's coaching the women's side. And you know, the women's side of things is obviously a growing sport. So you know, there's some opportunity to have some success, not just at a regional level, but at a national level, just because of how small, you know, the landscape is for women's wrestling. But yeah, you know, I think we've got some exciting, you know, times ahead of us, you know, as far as watching a program kind of grow, two young coaches, you know, trying to figure out that navigate that waters of, you know, what the wrestling landscape looks like at Carthage and kind of in this region, right? We're not in Iowa. Wrestling, they teach it early on.
And, they sure do.
And there's other pockets in the country where wrestling is kind of king. And so, yeah, we've got to try to find our way in that space.
Hmm. Seth, what do you want to say about this year's swimming and diving season?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, kind of similar to what we were talking about with volleyball. You know, you have, first of all, I guess to back up a little bit, one thing we haven't really talked about is that you do have rebuilding seasons sometimes, right? That is part of athletics. You kind of need to rebuild some things, especially when you graduate really impactful classes and individuals, you know, some of which you're aware of and you've met, right? And when some of those people move on, you're trying to identify who's going to fill those shoes. So I think there's an element of that, you know, when you're doing a little bit of rebuilding. But also there are some things you just can't control. And, you know, when you go for a number of years, you know, 5 or 6 years winning championships and the target is on your back, it's hard to then reframe what it looks like to actually get into chase mode and have to, you know, not just be fending people off, but actually trying to chase in advance. And we tried to reframe that a little bit during the season, but it's really hard until you live through it that first time. And so for us, we were so focused on traditional traditional rivals in our conference, and one of those a non-traditional rival, which is Augustana out in Rock Island, really had just a phenomenal season on the men's side. They had sort of built that on the women's side previously, and part of that was building a new pool. So they built a new aquatic facility a couple of years ago. They added a couple of sports like water polo to which can sometimes enhance swimming as well. And that really they really took off. And so even as coaches, when you're trying to sort of you know, coach the athletes through the fact that there's going to be some changes in our conference, until you're really there and in a sport like ours, until you're at that final tournament. You know, it's everything kind of hinges on that conference tournament at the end, that conference meet. until you're actually living through that, you don't quite realize it. So I think by halfway through that meet, they realized how kind of legitimate some of these other teams are in our conference right now, as they've been trying to chase us. And so I think there's a little bit of our program, both the men's and women's programs, being proud that they have sort of elevated the rest of the conference, it feels like, because people have been chasing us over the years.
Right.
But now we need to reframe what that looks like, right? So instead of just having our traditional rivals, we have some new ones there, and there's no reason why we won't be right back there on top, right? We were kind of fighting for second place this year. On the men's side, women were fighting for third place on the women's side. And, I think that, again, there's no reason why we won't be staying at least at that level, if not starting to chase those other teams that have now surpassed us.
Right. There you go. It's funny, telling a story like that just underscores how much psychology is involved in this whole business. I mean, beyond the physical, there's so much, and it even goes beyond just, you know, raising people to be great competitors, but also raising athletes to, you know, kind of understand all the things that you were just describing, which without the guidance of a coach, they're unlikely to really understand.
I think that's right. You know, there are some student athletes that get it, and sometimes we look to them as the ones that might be coaches in the future. Mm. Those ones that can kind of, even at that age, at 18 to 22, can see the big picture, can see the mental piece of it and how important that is. Sort of the, you know, tempering the mental and emotional part of all of that is just so important in all sports. I'd say in some ways it's been said, and I think it's kind of true, that in some of those individual sports that can be even more important, right? A golf, a tennis, a swimming, a track and field, those things, really having to center yourself and make sure you're kind of, you know, looking at the whole picture, and getting yourself prepared. And you're right, though. You know, often I'd say for the majority of student athletes, they really need that guidance from a coach.
Mm-hmm. Any other specifics on the landscape of Carthage athletics that we should be talking about? I mean, we could go ancient history and talk about football, but we don't need to.
No. I think, honestly, right now, it's a tremendous time. You know, I think I'm excited about, you know, being a part of the community and seeing what's next. Right? There's always that feeling of, like, when a season's over, you're never really looking backwards. You're always like, what's next? What's the next big thing coming? Right? And so, yeah, I'm excited to kind of see what the landscape brings, this next fall with our fall sports kicking off, and trying to find a way to continue to try to support, keep attracting the best and the brightest in the country, and for certainly in our backyard here in our region, to try to ensure that they want to come be Firebirds and help us to whatever program, whatever level that they're at, get them to that next stop. So we've got, you know, some different personnel. We just hired a new women's basketball coach. Excited about her. Just hired a new women's lacrosse coach. We've got a couple others. Esports is going to have some new leadership. Women's water polo is going to have some new leadership. So, got some, you know, some new vibrant names and faces in the department as well, which should be great.
Fantastic. What typically is the draw in terms of drawing a really great athlete to a school like Carthage? I mean, what typically is the selling point? Seth, I suspect that one of it is you can just point to that spectacular pool, but even beyond that, I mean...
Yeah, beyond that's the lake, right? I mean, it's,
true.
That's a pretty good one, too. No, go ahead, Seth.
Yeah, I think that draw... I've been talking. I talk to recruits, and when we're hiring staff, we talk about this a lot, right? I think that easy answer, the draw, is the beauty of the campus, right? I'm sure it's what drew you to one of the things that drew you to being interested in Carthage, Greg, right? You know, it's this beautiful campus built on the bluff with this great lake on one side and river on the other side, and I think that's huge. I think this location here, we sell that a lot, the location between Chicago and Milwaukee, and that's certainly true. I think especially when we're recruiting and attracting staff and faculty, I think that's really important at Carthage is to highlight that. I think for the students and the student athletes, the community itself here is a real sell, right? Mm-hmm. I think they recognize what, you know, the opportunities that come with going to college in Kenosha itself, right? In this, in the Kenosha County region and Kenosha Racine region. And for a lot of people, it's a huge step up, right? If you're coming just from a regular suburb or a small town, it's a, you know, we're a pretty vibrant city here. And I think that helps a lot with attracting people and seeing the opportunities and internships and jobs that you can get while you're in college and beyond. You know, it just kind of goes back to that, the whole reason why Carthage moved here from Carthage, Illinois in the first place, right? I think that legacy is still there of people seeing that this is a really vibrant place to come and to study and to do really well beyond that.
Very good. So the coming summer months are not time off for the coaches, I assume. How is the summer typically spent by most of you folks over in the athletic wing?
Yeah, I mean, it's an opportunity to kind of obviously reflect, you know, think about, you know, what we need to do differently. I mean, you know, it'll be a short few months before the kids are on campus. It's not much different than being a teacher, right? You have an opportunity to think back on the year that was inside your classroom and how you educated the kids. It's the same thing for us, you know, opportunity to kind of reflect, look at the student athlete experience surveys. What are they telling us that, you know, they'd like to see differently? Can we try to move the needle on any of those types of things? Certainly from a coaching side, and Seth can speak to this, I mean, it's a big time to evaluate the next group of Carthaginians, right? So we need to be in pools, on courts, out on fields, watching, you know, club teams, high school programs. I mean, youth sports is huge, right? So every weekend, there's something going on where you could be at to try to evaluate whether or not you think someone's qualified athletically to impact your program. So that's really a big piece of it. You're building that funnel of your prospects, and then once campus gets back in session in the fall, you know, you're trying to bring those kids back to, or bring them to the campus to kind of speak about all the great things that Carthage has to offer them as a student and as an athlete. So, you know, and we're going to do some, you know, community outreach stuff, that having camps and trying to get engaged with the local community and creating some enthusiasm around your sport, teaching them of skills and, you know, having some fun.
Win-win.
That's a big part of it.
Absolutely. I remember years ago, the football coach for many years at Carthage, this is well before your time, of course, Ryan.
And well, it's only been a month, so.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And Seth, too. But football coach for many years named Tim Rux. Did you know Tim?
I did, yeah. Okay. Yeah, Tim had a role in hiring me at Carthage. I got to know him well. Unfortunately, I only got to spend 1 year with him. Yeah.
So Tim was on the morning show a number of times, and I remember we had a specific conversation about athletics and academics. Because one of the local newspapers had run a large article where they'd interviewed him about that and about how hard he worked with the football players to make sure that they were really on top of their studies. And one of the things that came out in that article and in our conversation was that, generally speaking, the members of the football team during the football season were better academically than the general student body. I mean, they really, really did well. It was also true that they didn't do quite as well in the spring because the strict framework that was set up during the football season, they were left a little more to their own devices and they became a little more normal students by that point. But, I mean, that was a really impressive success story that I was so glad was highlighted in that article and in our interview. And I suspect for both of you, this is also one of the themes that this is about more than wins and losses. It's also about these men and women also being strong on the academic side. What happens to try to foster that?
Well, I think it's part of just Division III in general, right? I mean, for me, it's the final frontier in college athletics. I mean, if you look at a lot of, you know, college athletic programs now with name, image, likeness stuff coming through and, you know, there's a lot of transferring athletically at a lot of different levels because they're just chasing all the wrong things. I think, you know, at a place like Carthage and at Division III level, the lines are not blurred. I mean, it's true student athletes. I mean, they recognize that they have passions inside athletics that are bringing them to, you know, a certain institution and that they want to continue to do those things at a high level. And we can provide those. But yet, you know, they know that they'll do nothing greater than get their degrees and move on and do something inside there. And the statistics are alarming, you know, from a you know, just an institutional level as far as, like, you know, the types of GPAs from a team-wise that we see, male athletes, female student athletes, you know, they typically grade higher than even some of the general student population. And the NCAA supports that at a national level, just how impactful, you know, being a student athlete is on their overall success in the classroom. And so, yeah, I mean, this is truly, you know, the best spot to be able to try to get both of those. And you're right, to Tim's point, you know, that structure does go a long way in helping kids, you know, stay on the right path. You know, the time management skills are huge. Excuse me. And then, you know, you can utilize those when you're out there talking to people about internships and potential, you know, job opportunities.
Absolutely. It can make such a difference in so many ways. Mm-hmm. Great to see. Seth, before we finish out, I know that you are anxious to talk about May being Water Safety Month, and I know you are helping to steer a couple of initiatives that are designed to keep people safer in the water and maybe help some people avoid the tragic occurrence of a drowning not too long ago. Tell us what's happening during Water Safety Month.
Yeah, so similar to other years, the past, 3 to 5 years that the Safe Drown Water Coalition has existed here in Kenosha, really spearheaded by the YMCA. They've just done an amazing job. And even though there's about a dozen partners, you know, municipalities and organizations that are part of that, they really have done a great job spearheading it. And part of the May messaging comes from their social media messages and you know, opportunities like this to talk about, you know, really, I'd say 4 to 8 main points. And we talked about these a little bit about a year ago when I was on in May, and I won't go through all of them. I'll sort of highlight the ones that are the most impactful. And that number one, the first one is the pier is not for play. That was kind of the message, right? That Southport Pier, the beautiful red lighthouse, you know, it's been kind of a rite of passage over the years for people to jump off of that. And unfortunately, over the years, we've also seen what that has meant on the tragic side of it. We I think it was in 2018 or 19 that we lost a high school student here in town, and there had been many before that, and fortunately there haven't been any since then, because I think that message has really stuck. Also, there's been some added weight behind it, because there's actual city ordinances now, and you can get a ticket for jumping off and things like that. The shift then really became to the mouth of the Pike River, and that has become really kind of the key pressure point. And I know the drowning that happened just last week, which was really, I mean, when you think about it, you have 3 Carthage people sitting in this room. I mean, it was only about 100 yards from Carthage's campus that this happened, right? And it was on the other side of the river. You don't quite understand how close it is when you're there. But and that was just such a tragic situation in so many ways. I'd say the bulk of the tragedies that have happened outside of inland lakes, which are so important, you know, we need to remind people to wear life jackets when you're doing things like boating or swimming in the inland lakes. But gosh, that the Pike River, the pier, sorry, not the pier, the outlet that's there, that's right next to the, you know, Penoyer Band Shell that you know very well, Greg. Yeah. If I could actually take a minute, so an interesting story that I haven't even had a chance to tell you is it was last June, so it was shortly after I was here talking with you about that. My wife Emily and I were walking, listening to the Pops, you know, it was just because we live right in that neighborhood, and we're looking out and we see these kids swimming close, a little too close to that outlet current and where the Pike River goes out. Didn't really think anything of it, but, you know, as a swim coach and a lifeguard, you can never really relax, right? You're constantly always paying attention to that. And we keep walking a little farther, and I notice that they're kind of going further out, right? And these are strong swimmers, you know. It was obviously kids. I assumed they were siblings. And about a minute later, it became obvious that they were in trouble. And this is as the Pops are, you know, I'm trying to enjoy the music, and I'm watching this, and I had to kick off my shoes and sprint down the beach and go in after them. And this was, you know, the miracle, honestly, is that there was another person there. There was a guy who was just kind of drinking some beverages on the beach with his spouse, and he kicked off his shoes as well and came in after me. fortunately, he had a cooler with him, and this kind of speaks to the idea that, you know, you can use a number of different things as life safety apparatus. You know, ideally, you have a life ring or you have something or you're in a controlled environment. But when that doesn't happen, if you have a pool noodle, a basketball, a cooler, that so he came in after me, which is really fortunate. There's almost no way I would have been able to save both of these kids. The current is that strong. The water was that cold. I mean, it was shocking. Mm. I was fortunate to be able to bring the older one. They were siblings. I'm guessing one was about 9 and one was about 7. And the first thing I had to do, though, and this is another point on water safety, is the family of those kids recognized this was happening about the same time I did. And these mothers, and they were running into the water. Very obvious they were not swimmers. They were not comfortable. And it just highlighted for me, my first role there was to convince them not to go in, right? Mm. And that I got this, right?
Right.
And I can only imagine how tragic this situation would have been if we hadn't been there, right? And that tragedy was highlighted 2 weeks later. I just happened to be riding my bike right as they were pulling the 5-year-old boy out of, you know, his body out of the water, the young boy who died just a couple weeks later.
Right.
So it really just highlights how, you know, that one spot, and, you know, it's personal for me because not only did I have this experience, but I live right there and I see this happening. And, that message, I think, just needs to go out even stronger. And so another big initiative is that the Safe Drinking Water Coalition has had the approval to build some kiosks right there at Penoyer Beach to help sort of draw people in and educate them a little bit more about the specific dangers that are there. And the last thing I would say is that July 7th, there's going to be a water safety event at Washington Bowl, Washington Park Pool.
Hmm.
And so that'll be in the afternoon, probably about kickoff around 4 o'clock. The city of Kenosha is a partner in it, so we'll start to see a lot of messages about that through the city and social media.
Excellent. Just real quick, because we do have a couple minutes, explain to, especially to somebody listening who doesn't even exactly know the spot we're talking about, the spot that you know so well, what exactly is it that is so dangerous? I mean, like, what exactly was causing these youngsters, who apparently were decent swimmers, to get into such trouble?
So really any river outlet has potential dangers. It becomes an outlet current when a river is outletting into a huge body of water like the lake. And so really any outlet current there's potential to be dangerous because it's kind of confusing, right? A lake or a river can sort of seem meandering, and then all of a sudden as it's going out can turn pretty much into rushing water, even though it doesn't look like it initially. The added challenge with the Pike River and the mouth right there is that historically it moves a lot. So week to week, month to month, certainly year to year, it has shifted quite a bit north and south along the stretch of the north end of the Pike River or of Penoyer Beach, right where the bandshell, around where the bandshell is. Pretty much the natural outlet is about due east exactly from the bandshell there. The challenge is that the longshore currents that happen in Lake Michigan build up sediment. So basically just sand from the lake builds up along there and closes the mouth of that river.
Mm.
So for long stretches of time, sometimes only a day, but sometimes for weeks, that can be the outlet, the mouth can be blocked over with essentially a big sandbar, right? And that becomes essentially a kiddie pool. You know, it's shallow, it's warm because the sun's beating on it. It's really tempting. When I first moved here, I was just as tempted as anyone, just splash around in there. It seems really fun, right? But what people don't realize, I think, is that as soon as that day, or certainly the next day, when that outlet opens up, it just becomes a whole other beast, and really no way to really tell exactly what's going to happen. So when people are swimming at the beach, as they gravitate more and more towards that river mouth, that's where the currents just become, very, I'd say, confusing and really dangerous.
Right. And when it's a situation where there is a strong current, that current takes them then way out into Lake Michigan. I mean, where far beyond where they intended to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. All you have to do, I mean, you could put a ball there and watch, you know, within 10 seconds, that ball could be, you know, 100 feet out. Wow. And that's what I saw with those two swimmers that were there. I mean, it was within a matter of about a minute that they probably went 20 yards further out and were in serious trouble.
Wow. Well, thank goodness you were on hand, mm-hmm. and we hope that tragedies like the one that occurred not too long ago will just underscore and increase people's awareness of the potential dangers, and we hope people will take a lot more care if they choose to be in and around that portion of the Pike River and Lake Michigan. Seth Weidman, appreciate that and appreciate all the work that you've done on behalf of the important cause of water safety. That's another jewel in your crown, and appreciate you sharing what you did today on the morning show. And thank you so much for suggesting that Ryan Kane come and be our morning show guest today. This was terrific fun. And Ryan Kane, welcome to Carthage, welcome to the community, and we look forward to many future visits on the morning show with you over the years.
I'd love to have it.
Very good. Thanks again for being here. Tomorrow on the morning show, we want to remind you that we're going to be rebroadcasting from the archives my conversation with Greg Borupski, his book, First and Long, telling the story of the memorable first season of the combined football team of Messmer and Shorewood High Schools. Our weather forecast today, partly sunny skies and warm. We're headed for a high of 71 degrees inland, a little cooler near the lake. A few clouds rolling in overnight, rain after midnight with a low of 58. Tomorrow, Friday, cloudy, seasonal, 70% chance of rain with a high of 69. Right now, we're promised sunshine Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.